This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. We're going to be talking about how to prep for the WST Level 3 course. The WST Level 3 course is not an easy course to pass. It's actually quite tricky. And the best way to pass the course is to be prepared and ready to sit the exam. I know it sounds silly, but how can you get ready for that? Well, there's some issues associated with the different lengths of the course and how much time you've got to study. But the key thing is, if you can prepare before the course starts, then you'll be in a much stronger place to be able to have a very good and very enjoyable course. So we're going to be talking today about how to prepare and get the most out of your WST Level 3 course. So let's get going. First of all, the amount of study that WST says that you need to do for the WST Level 3 is 50 and a half hours of home study. Now, we've run hundreds of students through the Level 3 course over the years, and one of the things I can say with some confidence is that 50 and a half hour study is probably the minimum that you should be looking to do if you want to do well in the course. If you're particularly academic, you've got a fantastic memory, and you know lots about wines, then 50 and a half hours of home study is probably about right. Most of our students don't fit into that category. Some of them might have English as a second language, or they just simply haven't done any academic study for a long time, or even were never academic in the first place. If you fall into that category, I would strongly recommend that you do about 100 hours of study. That's twice as much as what WST recommend. But from our experience, what we've found is that students who do about 100 hours, they almost always pass, and a lot of them pass with distinctions. If you do 50 hours of home study, what you'll find is a lot of students will not pass. In the UK, it's classified as an A-level. I've got two daughters who've done A-levels in the UK, and one of my daughters is currently doing three A-levels. She's going to be studying that course for 2 years to sit three A-levels. Many people who do the WST Level 3 course will do this A-level in either 6 days of contact and usually over perhaps 6 weeks of study, which is significantly less than students normally do for an A-level. So you've got to be prepared to get the most out of the course. To give you an idea of how much work you've got to do, this graph shows the pass rate for our students and how much work they put in. We give students marks for every time they do things like flashcards, answer mock exams, etc. And what we've found is that students who do about 50 hours, that's between 2,500 and 5,000 flashcards, etc., the fail rate is about 25% or just below 25%. This is really not enough to be able to study with confidence. Our students, we say that if you can get 10,000 study points, which is about 100 hours worth of work, we will give you a pass guarantee. That means if you do the work and you fail, we'll actually pay for a resit of the exam. That's our pass guarantee. But it requires students to do about 100 hours. And even then, sometimes the odd student doesn't pass. But I think about 100 hours is about right. One thing that's certain, though, is learning about wine is a bit like peeling an onion. The more work you do, the more layers of the onion you get into, the more deeper your understanding about wine. Level one is really about just taking it out and going, oh, it's an onion. Level two, you peel back a few layers and you're starting to get a feel for what's going on. At level three, you actually start to get into what is actually happening in the wine industry and how those wines are made and why they taste like the way they are. Students who put the work in and start to understand this get massively energized and they really, really, and really enjoy the course. However, if you're trying to scrape through and do the minimum amount of work on this course, firstly, you're not really going to get the best out of the course. You're not going to understand things as well as you could. And it's going to actually become quite a drag because there's so much to learn, you're going to not be able to see the forest for the trees. Now, some people have lots of time to study. You might be retired and you're only really doing this course. That's brilliant. A lot of people, when they're doing the course, they have to hold down a job as well. And it can be quite tricky to do all the study. Now, there's three ways you can do this course. You can either do it as a block course, 6 days in a row, with the exam on the sixth day. This is the way I studied, and I strongly recommend students don't do this. It's very hard to do well in the course, and you need to be ready to turn up on day one, ready to sit the exam. You need to have done all your prep before you start the course. I would strongly recommend students not do this. However, some students cannot do the course locally. They have to travel somewhere. And if the travel is long and arduous, they want to go there. They want to do it in a week and get the course done. If you're going to do that, you need to be ready for the exam on day one. As soon as you turn up on that course, you should be ready to sit the exam and have a fairly good chance of passing it. Our preferred method of teaching the course is 6 days, but 1 day a week over 6 weeks with the exam on day six. This gives the students a week between each class to learn and solidify what they've learned and also prepare for the next class. I believe this is probably the best way of doing it if you can study. The final way of doing it is with 2 hour blocks, 14 2 hour blocks with an exam on the final day. Now, this has some advantages in that you don't really need to prepare because you've got so long for the course to run. However, in the last bit of study towards the exam, it can be a little bit tricky because you sort of forget what you learned almost a third of a year ago. So revision becomes a lot more problematic. Whatever way you do it, preparing for the course will do you a lot of good. Now, let's have a look at how much time you've got each evening if you're doing the course. So if you're doing 6 days in a row and you haven't done any pre-course preparation, then to hit that minimum 50 hours a week, you need to do about 10 hours a night in study. You think about it, you're doing a full day study in class, and then you've got to do 10 hours a night. You're not going to be ready for the exam. And if you try and achieve that 100 hours, that's 20 hours a night in study plus a full day of 8-9 hours of classwork. It's just not going to happen. So if you are going to do the course as a block course of 6 days in a row, you really need to do almost 50 to 100 hours beforehand before you even turn up. In fact, I would strongly recommend that the most you really can study in the evening is 2 or 3 hours, which means you need to do at least probably around 50 to 75 hours of pre-course study before the course starts. If you're doing it as 6 days, 1 day a week for 6 weeks, with the exam on the sixth day, then the amount of study you need to do each week is the same. It's that 10 to 20 hours a week, or roughly between 2 and 4 hours a night. That's a lot of work to do consistently and regularly. Very, very hard for a lot of people to be able to do that. Now, if you are retired, that's not a problem. But if you're holding down a job, that can be quite problematic. If you do 25 hours prep before the course starts, you're going to be required to do between 5 and 15 hours. 5 hours if you're trying to do 50 and a half hours of study at home, or 15 hours if you're trying to do the full 100 hours. So still quite a bit, but much more manageable. 5 to 15 hours a week is, you know, a couple of hours an evening, really. Nice and regular. However, if you can get your study up to about 50 hours before the course starts, that means you're going to be doing up to 10 hours a week. That is an hour and a half a day. So quite manageable if you're studying. And clearly, if you do more than that, it's much, much less. If you're doing the course over 15 weeks, 2 hours on one night a week for 15 weeks, including the exam, you need to do between 3.5 and 7 hours of study a week to do your 50 to 100 hours. And again, that's quite achievable. That's about an hour a night, so it's not too terrible, which is why I say if you are doing it over a 14, 15-week course, you don't necessarily have to do pre-course study. That said, I still think it would serve everybody in good stead to be able to do some of that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to focus on how to prepare for a 6-week course 1 day a week. And if you're doing the course as a block course, 6 days over 6 days, you need to do this and a heck of a lot more. And if you're doing it over 14 weeks, then Preparing like this will see you in a very strong position for your exam. So we're going to be focusing on what to prep for as you do it. Now, before we get into what's you need to do, you've got to remember what the exams are. And there's technically three exams in the course. There's a tasting exam, there's a multi-choice exam, and there's a short written answer exam. Now, a lot of students really panic about the tasting exam. They worry about tasting, can't do I have a palate that can actually taste wines? And they get very, very nervous about it. What I would say is we have a pass rate of 97% for our tasting exams. Very few people fail the tasting exam. It's pretty easy to pass. It's very hard to get a really good mark in the tasting exam, but by the same token, it's very hard to fail the tasting exam as well. So what I would say is, don't worry about preparing for the tasting exam at all. You are far better preparing for the multi-choice and the short written exam. In fact, the short written exam is where most students fail. Multi-choice students normally do pretty well in, but it's that short written exam. The problem with the short written exam is you have to be able to write a coherent, very, very good explanation of something without any extra information. So you've got to have really good recall and to be able to take different facts from the textbook and apply them in different ways, which means you need to know your material very well. And that's what sinks most people. You need to have that deep understanding of how the different things connect together. If you don't do a lot of preparation and you're just learning mainly in class, what you'll find is you'll have all these facts coming at you all the time, and you won't really be able to get on top of understanding how the facts fit together. And that's the key thing you need to understand to be able to pass the short written exam well. Now, to prep for the short written and multi-choice exam, WSD provide a lot of different materials. The most useful material is probably the textbook. And the textbook has all the facts that you'll need to know for the exam. The problem with the textbook is it's actually got a lot of additional material beyond what you need for the exam. In fact, there's whole sections in the textbook that are not examinable. So probably the most useful piece of information you can get is actually what's called the specification. Sadly, WSD don't provide this in your pack anymore, and as a result, you'll need to get hold of the specification and print it out. We'll do a whole future podcast on how to get the most out of the specification, but the specification has all the information about what you need to learn and what you don't need to learn for the exam. And it's a very, very useful document. The other document that WSD often provides is the workbook. The problem with the workbook is it's actually not that useful. I wouldn't get too beat up about the workbook. It's great because it gives you somewhere to write your tasting notes. It has a few maps and it has a small number of mock exam questions that you could look at. But in general, the workbook is not the most useful document at all, and I wouldn't get too worried about it. The specification and the textbook are the most important. And if you're going to do any sort of pre-course preparation, you definitely need that textbook. So I would strongly recommend that you make sure that you get an APP who will ship you the textbook in advance. Or APP means approved program provider. These are the people who are going to run the course for you that have been approved by WSET to run the course. If they do not provide the textbook to you in advance, then you should seriously consider buying the textbook and asking them to see if they can give you a discount so you don't need to purchase two copies of the textbook. If they're not willing to do that, then you should just buy the textbook. You need to have a copy of the textbook to do any pre-course prep. The other thing that I think is incredibly useful is flashcards. We have a large collection of WSD Level 3 flashcards or flashcards suitable for the WSD Level 3 course. And they cover all aspects of the course. I strongly recommend that you purchase our flashcards if you're not one of our students. And the reason for that is that they help to change the learning from passive to active. What do I mean by that? Most people will sit down and start reading the textbook. Some people might start reading the textbook and highlight things that they think are important. But usually, most students will start to doze off after a short period of time. You'll see that glazed over look over their face. And it happens to me as well when I'm reading a textbook. I sometimes just, my mind starts to wander, and next thing you know, I've read two chapters and I can't recall anything that I've just read. One of the things that we think our flashcards are super perfect for is that we've designed them so that the questions follow the textbook. That means that as you read the textbook, you can do, say, half a page and then answer a series of flashcards on the page that you've just read or half page that you've read, then do the next half page. This is called active learning, and active learning is so much more powerful than passive learning. Passive learning, when you're reading the textbook, your eyes will glaze over. You won't even realize you've read half the textbook before you know it, and you won't be able to recall anything. Active learning requires you to read a section and then recall it. And that process of reading, then recalling, means that that knowledge is so much deeper in your brain, and you're much more likely to recall it and remember it and be able to use that information later on in the exams. So active learning, I think, is really important. If you're not purchasing our flashcards, that's fine. You might want to consider making your own flashcards as you go through the textbook. We have something like 2,500 flashcards, so it's a lot of work to produce them. But if you want to create your own or you've got other skills, please make sure that you're doing something active learning. Read the textbook and then make a summary of the text in the textbook, highlighting things. This is really, really, really important. Please, I've had so many students say, I've read the textbook from cover to cover three times and I can't remember anything. And that's called passive learning, and you're not likely to learn much at all. So active learning is what you want to do. Another way of doing active learning is we offer students mock exam questions that are designed just on the chapter they've read. So you might read the chapter on Germany. There'll be a series of multiple choice questions and short written exam questions that you can then do on that chapter on Germany. Again, the idea is to make you recall the information and then use it. And that will then solidify it in your brain a lot deeper than just reading the chapter and moving on to the next chapter. So our process that we suggest to people is when you're learning before the course and during the course, you follow some very basic things. First of all, get your specification and look up what WSET want you to learn for that chapter you're about to read. As I said, there's a lot of additional material in the course that isn't in the exam, and it will save you about 10-15% of your time reading and not having to memorize a lot of information. So do consider looking at the specification, trying to understand what they want you to learn, what regions, what grape varieties in those regions are really important. And that'll help focus you in on what you need to know. The second step is to read some of the chapter, not all of the chapter, just some of the chapter, and then do some sort of active learning. Make notes, write, go through some flashcards, some sort of active learning as you're going through the chapter, and that'll keep you present and engaged. You've got to make sure you don't glaze over while you're reading. It's very easy to do. You've got to focus in on it, and you've got to be present and reading it and being aware of what you're doing. And active learning makes that super helpful. And then finally, after you've finished the chapter, it's a good idea to either make some notes or perhaps do some of our written end of chapter questions. Again, forcing you to recall that information. If there's something you don't understand or you don't remember, go back through the chapter and look at it. Engage with the textbook. Use the textbook as, yes, I'm going to read the textbook through once, but then whenever I don't understand anything, I'm going to go to that section in the textbook and I'm going to reread it or try and understand it a little bit deeper. What we would normally expect our students to do is, before each class, read the chapters that are relevant for the class. Do the flashcards for that chapter as well, and possibly end of chapter questions. Then attend in class, learn the chapter again in class if you like, and then after class, definitely go through the flashcards again and possibly go through the end of chapter questions again as well. By doing that process, you'll have learned the material three times. So when you come to that last week of revision, you're in a much stronger place to be able to recall the information, have a much deeper understanding about it. Also, by engaging with the material before class, what that means is when things come up in class that you don't understand, you can ask your tutor serious questions and have a proper understanding of it and make sure that anything you don't understand at home is answered while you're in class. And that will make the quality of your class time much, much higher. And if they're like me, we like to have a really engaging class where we're chucking things back and forth. I'm asking students questions. In fact, once we get into a course, I tend to get the students to tell me the answers and work things out as we go through the course. And if you've read the chapter, then you know the answers, or you're much more likely to know the answers. There's nothing worse than being a student in class and the teacher asks you a question and you've just got no scooby about what's going on. It's really annoying and a little bit embarrassing for everybody. So if you do the pre-course prep the way we've said, read the chapters, do the flashcards, make some notes or some sort of engagement with the material, maybe do some end of chapter questions, then you're going to be in a much stronger position to know the answer even before the class has even started. Let's talk about prepping for the exam before the course starts. And what I would say is, let's look at it from how far you've got before the course starts. Some students will get their textbook a week or two before the course starts because they've booked the course quite late. Personally, I think you should book the course about 3 months in advance, get the textbook, and then start working through it. But we're going to start with what you need to do on day one. For our students, the thing that I want you to be fully ready for on day one is viticulture. On day one, you typically do a module on how to taste wine, and then you do a module on viticulture. And that's what all we do in day one. We spend a lot of time talking about how to taste wine and viticulture, and we stop at that. You don't need to prep for how to taste wine, so you need to be ready for viticulture. Some APPs will follow WCT's recommendation, also cover vinification on day one as well. We find that's too much. The viticulture and vinification are huge modules, and teaching to taste wine is also a big module as well. So you've got three big modules. So we only cover two big modules on day one. However, if your lecturer or APP is following a more standard course, you'll find that you need to be ready for viticulture and vinification on day one. And if you can get your head around viticulture and vinification before day one, you'll be in a much, much stronger place to get the most out of the course. The WCT Level 3 course is primarily about climate and viticulture and vinification techniques to produce different styles of wines. If you can understand the importance of climate and the importance of different viticultural techniques, then you'll be in a very strong place to be able to work through a lot of the issues yourself. In fact, if you can get viticulture and vinification under your belt and have a reasonably solid understanding of that before course starts, then each region is just an application of that material. You take the information about climate, viticulture, vinification, and apply it to a particular region. The great thing about this is that whilst you're learning about a specific region, such as Bordeaux or Rhys Baixas or Marlborough in New Zealand, you're also learning how to apply those viticulture vinification techniques. The powerful thing about the Level 3 course is that once you've learned how to apply those techniques, you can go to any wine region in the world and start to understand the problems that they have and how they overcome them to produce the styles of wines that they produce. It's a very deep understanding of wine. It's peeling back a lot of layers of the onion and really gives you a good, strong understanding. For our students, viticulture is the most important because that's all we really cover on day one. But for other APPs, viticulture and vinification on day one. What does this mean? It means you need to look at the specification for each chapter, read through the chapter, do the flashcards, go back through, answer any short written questions that you can. Do that for viticulture. Also, if you're doing it, then do it for vinification as well. Now, whatever stage you start the course at, this is the first thing I want you to be doing, is always starting at viticulture and vinification. Then, once you've got viticulture and vinification under your belt and you've got a rough idea of how it works, and you've still got time before the course starts, then I want you to choose your favorite wine region. This is the region you know the most about and you're really engaged with. Pick your favorite wine region, and I want you to go work through the chapter on your favorite wine region. And in particular, I want you to identify any climatic references, any winemaking references, or any viticultural references. I then want you to go back to the textbook on climate, viticulture, and winemaking, and I want you to read up and get a deeper understanding of it. The thing you'll find in the textbook is the textbook often has a lot of information about viticulture or climate. Let's say climate, we'll use climate. For example, the book might say that Marlborough is a maritime climate. Great, that's all it says in the textbook about that climate. However, under viticulture, it'll say things like a maritime climate means that you're going to get a lot of cloud cover. You're going to get rain all through the year. Your growing season is going to be elongated because of the closeness to warm water supplies. So even though the textbook under Marlborough might say the climate is maritime, there's actually a lot of additional information that you can apply. And what I want you to do with your favorite wine region is I want you to take the information from the other part of the textbook and apply it to your favorite wine region. Similarly, if your favorite wine region is, say, Marlborough, you'll see that they might talk about protective winemaking, producing aromatic styles of wine. I want you to go into the textbook and look up how to make that style of wine. There's much more detail in this than there is in the on the region that you're looking at. And as a result, you can take lots of information from viticulture and apply it to that region and really fill out those notes. What we're doing, and this is the key difference between level two and level three, is at level two, they just give you lots of facts and you just need to regurgitate those facts. At level three, you need to be able to take information from different parts of the textbook and apply them to a particular wine region or a particular style of wine. So, what we're trying to do with this first wine region that is your favorite is to try and get you to start to understand how the textbook works, that you need to be able to bring information from different parts of the textbook and apply them to your wine region or to a wine region. Once you've done that and you've made notes about it, and hopefully it's a wine region you're really interested in, so it'll be really fun to really get in there and understand what's going on in that wine region. Then, once you've done that, I want you to choose your least favorite wine region. This is the region you really don't know anything about or you're not particularly bothered. The reason we're doing that is because this is the one you're going to put off and try and wing it at the end, whereas this is probably the region you need to look at in a bit more detail. So again, I want you to do the same thing. Read about the region or the country, make lots of notes about any references they make. Your region might be something like, say, Chablis, and there the climate is cool continental. But what does cool continental mean? Well, it means that you're going to struggle to get ripeness. The wines are typically going to have higher acidity, lower sugar levels. You're going to find that things like spring frosts are a major problem. Your growing season is shorter as well. There's lots of things there. You might need to do particular vineyard work associated with this. You might need to do particular winemaking techniques. Well, there is particular winemaking techniques that they use in Chablis. So you need to understand that and why they use them and what the outcome of that is. Once you've done that, you've applied it, your viticulture and vinification techniques to two wine regions, one you know well, one you don't know much about. You're in a pretty strong position. At this point, you've got a couple of options. If you've still got time for the before the course starts, you want to do two things. First of all, you want to start learning where the regions are. Now, this can be very helpful because climate is such a key driver for wine regions. If you know where the region is in the world, you can work out what the climate is. Once you know what the climate is, all of a sudden you know what type of styles of wines, the grape varieties that can be produced in that region. It also tells you a bit about the climatic issues, the problems with the region, and it can also lead you down the path of understanding a little bit about the winemaking techniques that they're going to use to produce wines in that region. The other thing you want to do is you want to keep studying regions as well. So pick a region that you like, pick a region that you don't know much about, and just alternate between the two of them as you're going through, and also try and learn the different regions. Now, we have a lot of flashcards that are map-based so that you can get a feel for where the different regions are. During the course, I would not get people to look at those flashcards too much, but before the course, they're fantastic. And first, introducing you to the wine region, letting you know where it is, and also helping you understand what the climate is of that region. These are really useful. And if you've got time before the course, they will add a lot of help to you. You can tie them up with learning about the maps and then doing the flashcards on that region, then making the notes about the vinification and any climatic issues, etc., associated with the region. Very, very useful. And I would continue in that vein, looking at regions, including maps, etc., as you go through the syllabus. And keep repeating this until about a week before the course starts. If you've been doing this, you've gone through a lot of different regions. The week before the course starts, you want to go back through and look at viticulture and vinification again, because this is the foundation. This is such an important foundation that I want you to be absolutely solid with this before the course starts. Go through the flashcards again, go through any mock questions that you can find again, and then you're ready to start the course. I hope this helps and it gives you some really, really good ideas about how to study. Please, please, whatever you do, do not do passive learning. You've got to do active learning and you've got to make it engaging and you've got to do it with something that gets you thinking about things in a deeper way. Making notes, summary notes, doing flashcards, making flashcards if you want to, doing mock exam questions, etc. Please consider them. As I say, we've got huge amounts of resources that we give to our students for free. Flashcards, mock exams, map questions. We even have a podcast dedicated to the WSET Level 3 course, and we also have a YouTube channel with lots of really good tips and tricks for the WSET Level 3 course. I hope that helps. Cheers, and good drinking.